Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. In many ways, I'm sorry we're having this meeting. In other ways, I know how important it is that we're having this meeting. The violence that has been occurring in our schools is incredibly sad, and it troubles a lot of folks, and it troubled me and Laura. And so I asked Margaret and Al to host a gathering of concerned citizens, the purpose of which is to come up with best practices and just shared experiences so that others might know how to react, to prevent and react to inexplicable and violence that is hard to imagine. I mean, all of us in this country want our classrooms to be gentle places of learning, places where people not only learn the basics, basic skills necessary to become productive citizens, but learn to relate to one another. And our parents, I know, want to be able to send their child or children to schools that are safe places. And the violence we've seen, this is upsetting to a lot of people. And I know it's upsetting to the professionals who are with us. But rather than be upset, it is best for all of us who are responsible for helping folks not only cope, but to prevent action from taking place. It's best to be proactive, and that's what this meeting is. And so I want to thank you all for joining. It's, I got a firsthand report on one of the panels from Laura, who said that, I think if I could summarize your words, it was like really interesting and very important. And so I thought what I would do is ask Al and Margaret to begin this session and maybe hear from some of the folks here, and then, if time permitting, hear from you all out in the audience. Again, I want to thank Margaret and Al for setting this up, and really thank you all for coming and taking an interest. I know we've got people from all around the country, and it's this is a nationwide effort to help people who are responsible protect our children. So.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for asking Margaret and I to host this important conference. We've had some good panel discussions, as you've already heard already. You've met some of the panelists that we've invited back. And just for our audience, again, we've asked Dr. Marlene Wong, Craig Scott, Fred Ellis, and Sheriff Jeff Dalsey to help us speak with the President about this important issue. Mr. President, I'm going to talk a little bit about the panel that I moderated, which dealt with the scope of the problem from the law enforcement perspective. Margaret is going to talk to you a little bit about the two other panels that we've heard from today, one dealing with responding to the tragedy, being prepared for the tragedy at the parent level and the school level, and the other is how do communities heal? How do they recover from these kinds of tragedies? With respect to the first panel, the good news we heard was that generally America's schools are safe places to be. Your kids are much more likely to be safer in school than they are at the mall. And that's the good news. We are, however, are seeing some indications in the last 2 years that those trends are changing a little bit. And so that's something that we'll want to watch very carefully, monitor that, and see what can be done to reverse that, if in fact that is a trend that we need to be worried on. We also learned that the U.S. Secret Service and other federal agencies are doing a lot of good work already in dealing with this issue. The Secret Service in particular has been working on a threat assessment guide that they make available. And there is someone in the audience that I would like to have come to the microphone. He is the Police Chief Art Kelly from New Bedford, Massachusetts. And he wants to relay to you an example of where he relied upon the information by the Secret Service in an actual case.
Yeah. I like the Secret Service too, Art.
I knew you would, Mr. President.
That's right, yeah.
Mr. President, post-Columbine, I was serving as a police chief in the city of New Bedford, Massachusetts. And one of the things is we watched Columbine in real time and looked at the reports come back. We looked at what we could learn and change in our own operations. We're a police department. We look at things operationally. What can we do to change? So we decided that we needed to change how we responded with our special weapons team. Instead of our normal wait till we had full, we went to what the recommended was, a fast alert group, people to get in, isolate, contain, and rescue. Post that, we went, we've handled this well, now we'll move on because we had a lot of other projects to work for. A friend who was the resident agent in charge for the Secret Service in Providence called me and said, I want you to look at a draft report. And it was a draft report that the service had done with the Department of Education regarding school shooters, regarding people who used targeted violence who identified the school as a location for their criminal act. And I said, fine, be happy to, because I was hoping for the quick answer. I was hoping that this report by the service and the Department of Ed would give me another quick response to resolve it. They didn't. What they did is they provided a wealth of information that allowed us to make a lot of changes. There was no effective profiling that we could use to identify where this would take place or who would do it. But they told us what kids did, that they talked about it. These were not sudden acts. They were well planned out. They involved others. Kids were, other people were concerned, all right, and various other issues that we could look at. We decided that the goal was prevention, and for the police department to become actively involved in it, we're going to have to work with the Department of Education or the school district, if you will, in New Bedford, and work literally to figure out a way of how we could be present and be able to prevent crimes from occurring. This took us literally a year, involved the mayor, the superintendent of school, all sorts of issues, work relations, work contracts, how it was going to work, who would select them. Finally, in 2001, we were in place, up online, working. We had obtained school resource officers through grants. We had them in the schools. And in that fall, after 9/11, we had a series of rumors that a shooting would take place in the school. We investigated that, and a key part of our working together with the community, with the school community, and with the students, and with their parents, was that they were willing to come forward. And as they started to share more and more information, it got into November, and then in Thanksgiving week, we were able to identify a group, be able to obtain search warrants and arrest warrants, and ended up arresting two adults and three juveniles, all students at the high school, in charging them with crimes from conspiracy to commit murder to aggravated assault and weapons charges. And we were able to, at the end of that, working through sentencing, probation, counseling, parole, et cetera, resolve all of those issues. And the result was an effort that took a look at the research that had been done, conducted, figured a way of applying it for our community, and then put it in our action and be able to present a crime from occurring. Thank you, Chief.
Let me ask you a question, Al. Not to you, Chief, but, well, I can ask you too. I presume out of this there will be a series of best practices that you will share with principals
schools
and school districts,
teachers,
that explain, for example, what people could look for to determine whether or not there's an early warning sign, and then how to respond.
Is that
okay? Good.
Mr. President, we also
Vice
heard
Chief.
from Tom Cuby of the Council of Educational Facility Planners. She talked to us about school design and that the way we design our schools can be helpful in protecting our children. We had an interesting discussion about metal detectors. Some of the panel members indicated that they don't believe it's an effective tool in preventing violence. One in five school shootings occur outside the school building, so they couldn't help in any event. Our students, as we know, are very smart and resourceful, and they figure out a way to avoid metal detectors. Also, one panel member said that it sends the wrong message to about what we think of our kids when we have them come to an environment where they're supposed to learn and they have to pass through metal detectors. So I found that to be very, very interesting.
I happen to agree. You know, what do I know?
yes, sir. We spent a lot of time talking about information sharing. This is very, very important in terms of gathering up information and being able to share it with not just parents, but administrators, events that happen at home. And I'd like Sheriff Dawson, talk a little bit about this point.
Also, Mr. President, your assumptions were correct. Most of the shootings take outside of where the metal detectors will be placed, so it's a very good point. One of the things I'd like to share with you is some programs we have implemented in Citrus County, and give credit to my superintendent, because I think, you know, there's been a revolution in first responders into the prevention end of school safety and how to try to combat school violence. I'm not sure anybody truly has a key to it, but Today I listened to a lot of wonderful programs, and one of the things that we have done is that I think you have two different predators. One is the external predator that is going to try to come to the school, and then you have an issue inside the school in dealing with student-on-student violence. I am a very big proponent of presence. In my school district, we have about 18 schools, and we are in the process of we have them in every high school, middle school, and we are working on every elementary school. And the reason for the elementary school is we really believe there's a connectivity between what information is shared with the relationship that's developed in the elementary school. And it's a little bit different than what you've heard before or may have seen in a lot of school districts. But the superintendent and I are dedicating valuable resources, manpower, down there to put deputy sheriffs in many different attire, not only looking like this, but in many different soft attire, to teach our young people from the aspect of drug awareness, violence, starting from the first grade to the third grade into our, as our attorney general, the cyber safety issues, the predator that comes in on our computer now. We have an opportunity that we teach every one of our third graders about the physical predator and the computer predator. The reason why I make that is there is a connectivity, there's a relationship build between law enforcement personnel at a very young age with our students that I think truly transcends into the middle school and the high school, which may cause a student that may hear something, because as we heard today, 81% of other students know that there is a violent act going to take place.
Yeah.
In my area, we several years ago at Citrus High School had an issue in which a armed gunman was coming because it was a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship that was going sour. He was highly upset. One of the students contacted the SRO that she had a relationship, and we avoided the school shooting. The other issue that I'd like to share with you is something I think is truly breaking ground, at least in our community, and that is dealing with what we call the acronym, and in our career field, acronyms are very important. It's called STP. And basically what that stands for is Safe Interagency Team Prevention. We bring 9 service entities together. We bring the executive committee together quarterly, but it is a site-specific school. And what we try to do, Mr. President, is we try to look at students that may have issues that may have been underground in the past, truly underground, not on the top, such as there's a domestic, and I'm just going to be very condensed in how this can feed to different areas, but we have a domestic at home. Little Johnny sees his mom be abused of a domestic. This is on a Friday. He's a great student on Friday. He comes to school on Monday, and he's just totally different, and nobody understands why. In the system we have set up where through the computer network, our road deputies contact the school resource officer, who in turn contacts a small group, understanding the concept of confidentiality, understanding the importance of that, that not everybody needs to know that little Johnny was a witness to that. And we're trying to look at that in the elementary school, the middle school, and the high school. So if a child has a psychological problem, instead of being put on a waiting list, we have developed an acronym, and we don't attach it to a child. The child doesn't know this. A student of interest. That all the 9 players, the organizations that come here, when they hear the word student of interest, they realize we have a child in crisis, a child that needs to be seen, and all the barriers break down. It is a long-term solution to what we think may have some very good opportunities down the road of everybody sharing information, and that's not been done before. Most elementary school teachers never knew what happened to little Johnny when they referred him to the administration or law enforcement. And just a brief comment on this was, it's wonderful that when we take a child that has some mental health issues and we put them with the mental health authorities, that mental health authorities, through a memorandum of understanding, will come back and tell us that this child is on the road to recovery, or this child's a danger, or this child's that. And we're actually getting to the point of some very good preventative, something the first responders haven't done. And we're starting to move that way, sir.
Is there an opportunity to share between sheriffs around the country how they're dealing with this issue? Does it make sense to have the National Sheriff's Association contact members, ask for storage practices, and then condense them and send them back out so that people can, who probably aren't listening to this, will be able to.
I think it'd be a wonderful initiative. Because one of the things I learned today was not more about questions, but more of solutions. There was many different speakers that came up and told us about different resources to use that I never was out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, I think that Sheriff Dawson would say that this program helps him do his job, which means that I'm sure all the sheriffs around the country would like that kind of program as well to help them do their job.
That's my point. In other
yes,
words,
sir.
Yeah, so who's responsible for talking to the head of the Sheriff's Association or the police chief to make sure that, is that you?
We'll make sure that happens.
All right, good. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
It'll be done.
Thank you.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
Sir, one final point I would just like to emphasize, and that is there are many schools that have plans in terms of how to deal with a threat or an incident that occurs. But the plans are worthless if people don't know about them, if they're not dusted off, if people don't practice them. And as the Secretary indicated earlier this morning, there's a lot of turnover that occurs in the school between the faculty, the administration, between students and families. It's very, very important for schools to understand what the plans are and to practice those plans. It made a big difference 2 weeks ago in terms of the shooting in Bailey, Colorado, where they were able to respond in a very effective manner to that tragedy. And so that's a very important thing that needs to be emphasized over and over again. There are many other points that we discussed, Mr. President, I think we've made some good progress in this area.
Thank you. Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's a good place to begin on panel number two. We call this an education, a teachable moment, because we have plans. Lots of work has been done post 9/11, post Katrina, and other incidents. But if parents, teachers, and faculty are not aware of what's been done, then they're worthless. And so on panel two, we talked a lot about readiness. We talked about how to create a school culture that was supportive and nurturing, that when young people have connections with adults, caring adults, how important that is, how there are signs to watch for, that a lack of academic success and other things like the sheriff talked about are clues that are ways that we might intervene. We also talked about the need for constant communication and coordination between school personnel and law enforcement. We talked about how every community is unique and individualized, that those are decisions and discussions that have to happen at the local level. So we also figured out ways or talked about ways to continue to develop those relationships and strategies around those sorts of things. Fred Ellis, who is the head of school safety in Fairfax County, my school district, and is also a member of my commission that's part of the No Child Left Behind Act, the Commission on Safe and Drug-Free Schools. Fred serves on that. We'll be meeting in the next few weeks and giving them some new charges that came out of our meeting today. But I'd like Fred to speak about some of the things that he's experienced. Fairfax County is considered to be one of the national models, national leaders in this area. So, Fred, thank you for your work.
Thank you. Some of the things we talked about this morning at today's panel, specifically regarding crisis plans, is how you develop them. Some of the things that you look at in terms of all hazards, basically appendixing those types of all hazards plans with specific incident kind of information, and using a collaborative group with all the stakeholders in terms of public safety and parents and students and the community be involved in those. And then as the Secretary indicated, the plans are not enough in and of themselves, that they have to be exercised regularly and they have to be updated. For instance, in Fairfax County Public Schools, all of our school-based crisis plans have to be updated annually. And we also provide facilitated tabletop exercises for those schools to give them an opportunity to work that plan and to do different types of drills. Because, like you say, the plans aren't that great sitting on the shelf if you don't take an opportunity to use those and to exercise them. Some of the other things we talked about at the panel that I thought were helpful were the conversations about the prevention efforts in terms of character development and behavior management in a classroom, the role of principals, making it important at the top. I think you can probably recognize that. If it's important to the man at the top, it becomes important to the folks under him. And also the involvement of parents. What opportunities there are out there for them to become involved in their children's educational process and the community of the school and in the safety and security issues and crisis management, emergency management components that are in a school environment. And then lastly, we also heard from students who run a crime watch program, if you will, at their school. A fascinating, I think, kind of opportunity to do that, and one that has some real possibilities.
Yeah. Did you say 81% of the students were aware of a violent act?
Yeah, that was some of the data that I had heard today from the Secret Service and some of their research, that much information was out there.
Oh. Seems like a pretty good opportunity to prevent an attack if 81% of the there's an 81% awareness of a potential attack, which then I guess would lead to to making sure principals explain to students, when you hear something, please tell me.
Yes, sir. I think that's part of the point, is that there needs to be a culture, a climate in a school where students and faculty and staff and visitors feel comfortable with reporting stuff, particularly at the student level, because we know that they do talk about it, but they have to feel comfortable that, one, they know where to go to report this information, and that there's going to be a useful and successful outcome and intervention to prevent some violence.
We also heard from a gentleman named Jim Moore, who founded a program called Project Watchdogs, which is, where are you, Jim? There he is. It's basically dads coming into schools and being role models, modeling good behavior and being a presence. Another way that we can kind of be alert for behavioral patterns and the like is to make sure that we have as many grown-ups in schools as we possibly can. So, Jim, thank you for your work. He's from Arkansas. Actually, he's from La Mesa.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Dawson County.
Anyway, on panel three, we talked about recovery and healing and how it takes time. And we learned from our professionals like Marlene Wong, whom I've had the opportunity to get to know, as she helped us and helped communities on the Gulf Coast deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. She's been an asset to the Department of Education and our work for a very long time. And she's from Los Angeles, works at the LA Unified School District. We know also that these sorts of incidents can occur in inner city America, in Amish communities, private schools, public schools. Really every single community has to be alert. So Marlene, why don't you talk a little bit about your work in Los Angeles?
Well, it's work in Los Angeles, and I think it's representative of work that we do all over the country. Recovery has become such an important part after these tragic events that it deeply affects young people who are early in their development, in the way that they look at hope for their future, in the way that they look at safety, not just at school, but in their communities. And recovery in the form of mental health services with school psychologists, counselors, social workers, who really give children an opportunity after these tragic events to talk about it and to explain what their experience has been, and then to help them to cope with it, to return to school. That's the important thing. How do we cope with adversity? Because I think that's the strength of this country. And we found that's been very effective. And also we've learned that we can't work alone. That, I mean, for instance, the people that we work with in our school district are our school resource officers, our law enforcement officers, and cops in schools in general are just and such an asset. I think it represents people in the community coming to the school and being role models for young people. And also I just want to say that your president's new Freedom Commission, Dr. Mike Hogan, made some really wonderful recommendations, and that I'm hoping that it will invigorate the whole discussion about prevention of depression among young people. And because we found in the school shooters that often depression and homicide are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah,
each of them expressed the wish to die as well as the intent to hurt others.
And is it typical that a student that expresses the wish to die makes that clear to his or her peers? and to the, if people are attuned to what that means, to pay attention to somebody who exhibits the behavior that says, I'm depressed and I want to die? I mean, is it,
you know, that's really
a pretty strong statement.
It's a wonderful question, because there are behaviors and there are expressions of hopelessness that come before that. And so I think we have to do a lot of education with just folks who say, you know, they've changed. They don't have joy in life, and that this is an early warning sign.
But is it easy to define the behavior that would tip off an adult in a school or a coach or art teacher that this is the kind of behavior that that ought to say to us, we better pay attention to this person, this child?
Yes, there's a short list, and actually the student who sat on the previous panel did an excellent job of naming all of those things. I was so proud of her. I thought she ought to come and do some training with our
And how many
staff.
Educators do you think that can name? Good job, by the way. And how many adults do you think around the schools in America can name the traits that would say we better pay attention to this person?
Not enough.
And therefore, what can we do to make sure that if, that people understand what to look for? It seems like to me that a lot of our focus ought to be on preventing. And no question
Absolutely.
We ought to worry about recovering. But preventing makes the recovery not necessary. So,
Kiera, you did such a nice job this morning. Why don't you go to the microphone real quick and tell us the 9 signs. Kiera is involved in a...
Where are you from, Kiera?
She's from Florida.
Mr. President, I'm from Walton County, Florida.
Good. I know your governor.
I'm the president of Youth Crime Watch for my high school, which is Walton Senior High School. Some of the traits that are noticeable are changes in everyday habits, or if you know a friend, stuff like playing sports, he won't play sports, grade averages dropping, they start acting different, they start eating different, dressing different, carrying themselves in a different manner as you would normally know them, are just some of the small things that you as a friend or as a teacher or a parent could notice that'll bring upon a change in case if they are depressed or feeling as though they want to commit suicide or hurt somebody or themselves.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We had so many people who are.
Let me ask a question.
Yes,
from your experience, Marlene, if a teacher were to notice those traits, is it typical that someone would act on them? In other words, I'm just trying to make sure I understand. If a teacher sees a student begin to change clothes and begin to more, is it, does a principal and teacher tend to say, well, that's really not my business, it's the parent's business? Or, in other words, awareness requires, by the way, some kind of response.
And And I think that varies around the country. I think that more and more people are beginning to pay attention, just because we have paid such a dear price for ignoring some of the warning signs.
So maybe an outcome for this is to encourage for you to get in touch with the principals' organizations or the teachers' organizations and help
them be aware of the warning signs.
And then I guess there's a certain confidence that has to come with, you know, interceding in a child's life.
Mm-hmm.
My only question is there hesitancy when an adult says, well, maybe this is just the way it's supposed to be, or maybe it's none of my business? And the question is, if that's the case, if you can determine that's the case, how do you get people to respond differently?
Kathy Payne from Oregon told us about, or they had an incident there, that there were dozens of signs in the of this particular shooter, and the full picture didn't become clear until after the incident.
Can you, do you mind sharing that? Thanks, Kathy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. I was a school psychologist in Springfield, Oregon, when the shooting happened there in 1998. And the point I was making is that for our shooter, yes, there were things that individuals knew about him. His parents knew some things. Teachers saw a few things. But at no time was there a way for all of those people, in a sense, to get together, you know, and share that entire picture. So 2020 hindsight has been very good, and we've been able to say, aha, I see how all that fit together. But because of whether it's lack of resources or lack of knowledge, we didn't have a mechanism for that to happen. We're trying to do a better job with that now, in forming what we call care teams in our schools, where teachers regularly do get together and share concerns about students, and then we try to connect them with our mental health services in the community.
Now, the whole purpose of this exercise is to help educate, and if there needs to be cultural change inside schools for teachers to become more aware and more active, or principals, is to try to stimulate these kinds of discussions, obviously outside of Washington, at the local level or state levels, in the hopes of preventing these from happening in the first place. I thank you for coming to share your experience, and appreciate you sharing your expertise.
One of the people who's been doing that in a very meaningful way is Craig Scott, who's talked all over the country to teenagers and teachers and educators and school leaders, and he has a very powerful story. As you know, his sister Rachel was murdered in Columbine, and so Craig, why don't you share your thoughts?
Well, just to give a little background, I was in the school library during the shooting. I had 10 classmates that were killed around me. I lost 2 friends underneath the table, and then later that same day learned that my sister Rachel Joy Scott was the first one that was killed. And really, I've been just now traveling over the last 7 years, just sharing a simple story of compassion, and it's had a huge impact on the school culture. Kids really have looked to her as a role model. She's been a hero to a lot of kids. And last night, I just was looking back over the last 7 years, and I was in my hotel room, and I just journaled, and I wanted to express real quick, or in the next couple of minutes, just read to you what I wrote in my journal. That expresses my feelings best. I said, "Once upon a time, our goal of education and our country was first and foremost character. Academic achievement is now the main goal. I knew 2 students at Columbine that achieved the goal of knowledge. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebel were very smart. They planned the shooting for a year and predicted the events that would unfold afterwards. The problem wasn't their education at my school, Columbine. Their problem was their character. I've grown up in a culture today that doesn't teach me anything of substance, of value. Hollywood bombards me every day with messages of emptiness and shallowness, and the youth are crying for something to stand for, something to believe in. If it weren't for my faith or my family, I possibly could have fallen to the lies that our culture tells us. But now I've traveled, I've spoken to over 1 million teens across this country. I've not always seen what I've liked. I've not always liked what I've seen in the schools. I've seen depression, anger, and loneliness, students without direction or purpose. I've seen students who call themselves cutters that cut themselves because that's the way they know to take out the pain that they're dealing with. I've learned a lot about my generation, and I've learned a lot since I lost my friends and my sister. And the main thing I've learned is that kindness and compassion can be the biggest antidotes to anger and hatred, and I believe the biggest antidotes to violence. With a program my father started called Rachel's Challenge, and a program my mom speaks for called Life Choices, we have seen bullying stop, suicides aborted. We have 10 incidents where a student came up with hit lists or plans to shoot up his or her his school all male. Hand told either the speaker or told the teacher about their plans, but had a change of heart. As a side effect, we've seen, and our statistics have shown, in the where our program has been, a rise in school attendance and an increase in academic achievement. How have we done it? We've done it with a simple story of a young girl who believed in compassion and was killed for her faith. That was the story of Rachel Joy Scott, but my sister is not the only one who believes and kindness, and she's not been the only one in her brave stance against the injustice, willing to stand up for the one who gets put down in school, to sit by the student that sits all alone at lunch, and to talk to or reach out to the one who is consistently ignored or made fun of. She literally has inspired millions of people to continue the chain reaction she started. A lot of those are students across the country. I've read Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold's journals that were recently released, and Basically, Eric wrote in one of his journals, "If only you were nicer to me, maybe this wouldn't have happened." I don't know who else is tired of Band-Aid answers, but I know Band-Aids aren't going to save kids from dying. I give every student out there a challenge my sister put down on paper a month before she died. When she wrote for her class, she said, "I have this theory that if one person can go out of their way to show compassion, it will start a chain reaction of the same. People will never know how far a little kindness can go." Yeah. I challenge every teacher, principal, and superintendent and educator here today, take a look at teaching that doesn't just teach the head, but teaches the heart. The students today that I've met are looking for truth. You can help point them to what's right and what's wrong. Truth is not all relative, despite what our culture, our pop culture, tells us. To parents in the room today, please love your kids like my parents loved me, like my parents loved Rachel. To the media and entertainment industry, I would give the challenge to take responsibility. Own up to the product. Thank you. Own up to the product that you create and the effect that it has on your audience. The two shooters were very much impacted and influenced by violence through the media and dwelled on violent video games, violent movies, music, and things they saw through the internet. And it's a common theme with a lot of these shooters that they've chosen very negative influences in their life. I believe there needs to be the positive influences that are highlighted on our television and through our media. You're a powerful institution affecting my generation every day. Please think about when releasing your next movie, your next song, your next game, your next headline story. I myself am a filmmaker, and I want to create movies that inspire, build people up with stories of ennobling characters. To the lawmakers and politicians who want to slap those Band-Aids on deep gaping wounds, I'm simply going to repeat a poem that my dad read to the House Judiciary of Congress several months after the Columbine shooting, where he said, "Your laws ignore our deepest needs. Your words are empty air. You've stripped away our heritage. You've outlawed simple prayer. Now gunshots fill our classrooms and precious children die. You seek for answers everywhere and ask the question why. You regulate restrictive law through legislative creed, and yet you fail to understand that God is what we need." I'm not promoting that religion be brought back to schools. I don't believe that's the answer. But I do believe in education that touches and teaches the heart and helps form the character. And I believe if that can be implemented in the education on a daily basis, we'll see a change. I'm not out to change the world, just to change one person, one teen at a time. And I've finished with just, please take my words to heart today. They were bought at a high price.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good job. Okay. Which one of us up here can now talk after that, you know? Thank you. Yeah, it's great. You are changing our society. You may not realize it, but thank you. Powerful statement. I'd be glad to hear from people in the audience. Yeah, I probably won't be able to hear from all of you in the audience. That's great, Craig. Thank you. Do I have that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Mr. President, I haven't had this feeling since I was 17, and that's the last time that I asked you a question in Hereford, Texas. I've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people since. Last time I was nervous was when I was 17 in Hereford, Texas, and you were campaigning in Hereford, Texas. So.
Don't tell him I came in second place in a two-man race.
My name is Pete Vargas. I'm the National Director for Rachel's Challenge, the program that Craig,
oh, fantastic, Pete.
That Craig just talked about. And I want to echo something that's very dear to my heart and Daryl, his father, who's sitting right here.
Your dad's there?
Where's your dad?
Excuse me. Oh, hey, thank you. Raised a good man here.
I talk to thousands of educators every month. Our team does thousands. And one of the things that disturbs me is there's hundreds that say, Pete, y'all have changed the culture of our school, but then there's thousands that say, it's so hard for us to fit our, we want your program so bad, but we have testing and testing and testing and this and that. And it made me think about something, President. It made me think about growing up. I was going the wrong direction completely. I was stealing. I was doing everything possibly wrong, vandalism, beating up kids. And in seventh grade, there was a teacher, Mrs. Maldonado, who touched my heart. In 10th grade, there was a lady that you know from Hereford, Texas, that touched my heart. And in ninth grade, my tennis coach touched my heart. And those three people changed my life. And as we, why I believe in what I'm doing so much is Daryl's motto is that if we touch the heart of the kid, the head will follow.
Right.
If we touch their heart, the head will follow, and the hands will make the difference. My question to you today is, I don't want us to look at, you know, the warning signs. I want us to eliminate the warning signs.
Right, right.
What can we do? What can we do? And this is echoing Daryl and what Craig just said. What can we do from the government standpoint to go back to touching the heart of the kid, to teaching character education? Because we hear that all the time about the testing.
So. Yeah, I agree. Pete, let me say first on the tests. Thanks for coming. It's good to see you again. I was probably more nervous than you were when you asked the question. I like selective memory. First, in terms of testing, I don't think it's zero sum. I think you can make sure a child learns, and I think you can instill character at the same time. I don't think you have to choose. As a matter of fact, I know we can't say that one doesn't beget the other. I happen to believe that self-esteem comes when a child realizes he or she can read early at grade level. And I think one of the real problems, we have, Pete, is a school system across the country that basically gives up on children because we don't measure to determine whether or not they have the skills necessary to read, for example. And so I'm concerned about a system that socially promotes children, because I think that at some point in time that begins to affect a child's vision of the future, and a grim vision of the future may be that which triggers a response that is negative. Character education is, I know we funded quite a bit of it when I was the governor of Texas. Let me put the funding issue right on the table. The federal government is a limited funder of education, and I happen to believe that's the way it should be. I don't think it's possible for the people to have expectations that the government should fund public schools. This is a local responsibility. It's been that way throughout our history. I think it makes sense to do so because it tends to make control of our schools, you know, more localized, which I happen to think is the best way to achieve excellence. And so, therefore, not to try to pass responsibilities, although we do have, you know, character education grants out of Washington, and we've got, you know, school safety grants out of Washington. But the best place to facilitate that kind of initiative to make sure that character is taught in schools is at the state level. Secondly, it's really important, Pete, that people not think government is a loving entity. Government is law and justice. Love comes from the hearts of people that are able to impart love. And therefore, what Craig is doing is, he doesn't realize it, he's a social entrepreneur. He is inspiring others to continue to reach out to say to somebody who's lonely, I love you. And I'm afraid it requires a higher power than the federal government to cause somebody to love somebody. And therefore, it's a... one of the things we can do, though, is to call upon people. We've got the USA Freedom Corps Initiative, for example, that calls on volunteers to take active participation in their communities. You know, Craig said something interesting. I believe societies change one heart at a time. And I don't mean to mimic what you said, but I was actually praising what you said, because that's how it works. And the truth of the matter is, if we really think about it, the primary responsibility, the primary teacher of character, is the parent. That is the front line of enabling our society to be a compassionate, decent place. You wouldn't be sitting here if your mother and father hadn't instilled in you a, you know, something inside your soul that caused you to sit here in front of the President of the United States and give an unbelievably eloquent testimony about compassion. And the second line of defense in schools is obviously teachers. And the hope is that out of this violence and terror comes this notion that teachers have got to be, and by the way, the teachers have got an unbelievably hard job to not only teach, but to show concern and compassion. They got their own lives to live. They got their own families to raise, and many times, and now they've got to deal with yet another, you know, family situation, Pete. But yet, nevertheless, that is where the compassion up. You notice, you didn't say I went to a program. You named three individuals that were heroic in your lives, and that's the way it works. Now, teaching character matters, no question about it. And there's some great curriculum to do it. But the truth of the matter is, all this need to say I love you comes from your soul. And so hopefully out of these tragedies will come this sense of communal obligation all throughout our country for people to take an extra effort to comfort the lonely. That could be a student or a teacher, Pete, in your case, to a tennis coach. Still got a backhand, you know. Anyway, it's thank you, buddy. It's good to see you again. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Mr. President, thank you. My name is John Cavillin. Up until yesterday, I was in a Walt Disney Imagineer for 16 years, but I have quit that activity to commit myself for the rest of my life to a character education program that my sister and her husband and I created 15 years ago on a little island in the Pacific Northwest called the Virtues Project. And it is exactly what I think many people are looking for because it reaches the heart. It is a multi-faith, multicultural effort to simply teach five strategies that help people practice virtues in everyday life. What we've learned in 85 countries where this is applied is that values are culture specific. Virtues are universal to every sacred tradition. So simply practicing virtues in the home, in the school, in the workplace makes a shift in the culture. And I am offering my love and my admiration for so many good-willed people in this room for bringing this group of people together. It's so exciting. And we're simply here to support whatever is going on.
Yeah, thanks for doing what you're doing. See, this is our country is blessed by the fact that we have people who stand up and say, I want to contribute, like you. Just retired yesterday? Man, you don't look a day over 60. Anyway. But see, Craig, what you're doing and what this gentleman is doing will stimulate a lot of, as you said, you talk to a million kids or a million people. Same with you, sir. I believe that there is no single answer, in other words, single program. It's a mosaic of programs all stimulated because people have decided to do something about the problem. And it's really the uniqueness of the country. I like to remind our fellow citizens that de Tocqueville recognized this in 1832, the fact that voluntary organizations came together to help solve local problems. And it is, in my judgment, it is this capacity of citizens to take action to solve problems that defines the true greatness of America. And Pete, to answer your question about government, government's role in many ways is to stimulate and to encourage and to thank people who have taken upon themselves to either start character education or go into classrooms and to change society one person at a time. Yes, sir.
Mr. President, my name is Marvin Nash. I represent the Bullying Hurts Program and the Nash Foundation, which stands for No Adolescent Should Hurt, from Cheyenne, Wyoming. I want to let you know that I will be traveling back to Nashville, Tennessee, where Stormy Warren with Great American Country and Charlie Daniels will be helping me make PSAs to address this issue.
Thank you.
Instead of talking about my program, though, I'm going to give my time up to this lady right here. She spent her time with 17 students locked in a closet at Columbine, and she has a question for you. So we're not going to talk about me. We're going to talk about her.
Thank you, buddy. Nice-looking hat.
Mr. President, Madam Secretary of Education Marlene Craig and everybody else. My name is Judy Greco, and I'm just a regular person. I don't have a radio talk show. I'm not in charge of a big major organization. I am a flight attendant for Frontier Airlines, and I'm shaking right now because I didn't think I was going to get up here. And I'm also a proud retired teacher from Columbine High School. And I think everything I was going to say just kind of flew out of my mind. I'm also a professional volunteer, and I am not here to ask for money for any program. When I said professional volunteer, I don't mean I make money volunteering, but there are a whole group of just regular people like me out there. Even though I retired from Columbine, I have a daughter at Columbine right now who's a junior. I volunteer in the post-grad center there. I volunteered with the cheer squad, the football team, and, you know, it doesn't always take a lot of money to get things done. It's little people like me. I don't mean in size. I mean, it's little people like me who get out there, little people like us, like Granddaddy Wong used to say, okay, one stick, you break it one at a time, but if we stick together, we can get it done. I'm just saying, enlist us volunteers. I always have time to volunteer, and I know other people do too, and it's what Craig was saying. You know, it comes from the heart. President Bush, it's what you were saying. It's what our parents taught us, and it's what we need to teach our kids. It's that, I hope I don't pronounce it wrong, generativity, where we help to make the next generation better. So I'm sorry, I forgot what my question was.
Matters is your testimony, not your question.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Last question, I got to go.
Good afternoon.
Gonzalez is reminding me, actually, I'm on a schedule here. I apologize. I'd like to sit here all day listening. I am inspired that so many came to talk about the subject. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, Madam Secretary. My name is Annalise Richmond, and I'm the Youth Programs Director in New York City for a nonprofit called Art of Living Foundation. And like a lot of these wonderful people here, we teach a program in human values and stress management for teenagers and how to handle their negative emotions, which they just don't learn, I'm finding nowadays. And what I have students constantly asking me is, Can't this be a class in our school? Can we learn human values and universal ethics that are found in every culture, but they're not being taught, a lot of times not at home, they're not being taught, and they're definitely not always being taught in schools. There's some amazing public school teachers, but there's also some very stressed out public school teachers.
Absolutely.
And can this be, is there a way to have a class in public school where students learn stress management, the ability to deal with their own anger, frustration, and violent tendencies, and also to learn human values and actually practice them? Can they receive credit for a class like this? This is what students are asking, and I have superintendents coming to me saying, what can you do in our suspension centers? We'll give credit to students for doing this. Is there a way we can do that?
Those are state curriculum issues, and lots of states have included character education or programs like that as part of their required curriculum and give credit for it. But I would commend all those superintendents to their state board of education and put them to work. We had some of that in Texas and gave a lot of credit for peer mentoring and those sorts of things that are so supportive of kids.
I am sorry for those of you standing in line. Yeah, I know. I apologize. Okay, one final guy. Go ahead.
I wanted to explain why I had on a bright red jacket.
Yeah, I was about that's why.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
My name is Michael Wade Smith, and I'm the National President for Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America. We are an in-school, high school, and middle school organization focusing on the family. Our main mission is to promote family as the basic unit of society. And I'm happy I got to follow up after your question, because we are Family and Consumer Sciences. Is curriculum in high schools and middle schools that is teaching character education, that is teaching youth violence prevention. We're teaching career exploration. Because of our title, Family and Consumer Sciences and Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America, we address every one of the issues that's been presented in the discussions and in this room. And we are willing and wanting to partner with every single person in here to help students get this message out to students. We're about peer-to-peer message sharing. We want each and every student in our organization, which reaches about 250,000 students, to be a lot broader than that. We want to touch every student in America through our programs and through our mission to promote family as the basic unit of society and the values thereof.
Head of the Sheriff's Department readily sprung to his feet and said, "You can count on me." The purpose has got to be more than just hoping somebody is listening to TV. The purpose has got to be out of this that we share information so that we can save lives, encourage parents, and help people respond. And I want to thank you all very much for coming. I'm proud you're here. God bless you all.